if you want to be a guest, please email me. I have received so many emails of people that are excited and passionate about being a guest on this show. The process is time consuming. I go through about an hour long pre-interview and I determine where you'd fit best in the season. So if you've gone through the pre-interview process, or we've messaged back and forth via email and haven't gone through the pre-interview process, I'm not ignoring you. I promise. There's just a lot on my plate and I am one person. So that being said, I look forward to talking with every one of you that is interested in being on this podcast. Y'all are amazing and I honestly could not do this podcast without the support that I receive from each one of you. So thank you so much.
You have to be a forceful man. If you are weak, you will get run over. And that was the culture. Mm-hmm. When I would come into church and do anything that was slightly flamboyant or anything that screamed of femininity, you were ridiculed and looked down on as not being a forceful person. And that I saw play out for my whole pastoral career in almost 20 years as a pastor. And if I wasn't being forceful and forcing my way, I was perceived as being passive, and passive was identified with being feminine or weak, because women are weak. Women can't lead because they're weaker gender, and they can't handle the stress of being pastors in the church. Ugh, so gross, that world. You have to be a forceful man. I lived that. I perpetrated that on other women in our church, and I've had to live with that.
Welcome to the Focus on Your Own Family podcast. Fundamentalist evangelicalism impacted a generation. We survived physical, psychological, mental, and spiritual abuse. We survived the Focus on the Family movement, and we want to talk about it. Trigger warning, guests will be sharing stories of domestic violence, child abuse, and animal abuse. Please listen with caution. This is Joanna. Here is her story. Hey, Joanna, welcome back.
Hello again.
Let's just dive right into it.
Let's do this.
We were talking about how binary thinking in regards to gender, that person can't wear a pink shirt, that person can't do this, and how that stifled you in how you lived inside of that world, right? Like you had to present as male, but you had, quote, female by society standards, female tendencies, and just like that tension point between it, that struggle with that. So I thought, since we talked about that, and just to recap everybody, first off, go and listen to the first part of this episode. We talk about takeover leadership, colonizing, how women will be thankful when a man has, quote, gone in, colonized, taken her, essentially colonized her.
Right.
And we talked about how you tried to mimic that colonization, that toxic masculinity, alpha male, I think is the new way that they're saying it. It's just asshole rebranded. Right. I have a lot of other adjectives. We talked about that and just this idea that men are, through the evangelical movement, taught that it's not only expected, or it's not only accepted, but expected for them to invade people's space. Right. And how the gospel is really designed at this point through the evangelical church to do just that. Like it's going to invade, right? Like how many times do we hear in prophetic worship, and you can really speak to this, invade us, Lord, invade this moment. And yet we're all saying God is a gentleman. His yoke is easy and his burden is light. But we're saying these very aggressive phrases when it comes to, when it comes to that. So I'd love to move into that conversation.
So I had some very domineering pastoral leadership when I first came in to be a pastor. If you're joining this conversation and you don't know much of my story, I became a pastor at the age of 18 years old. Right out of high school, I got hired by this mega church in town, 2,000-3,000 people a weekend. Good luck. You're a pastor. You're 18. No training. You'll be fine. This will be great. Don't worry about it. That was my world. And so I got thrust into this like pastoral leadership without any expectation about what it meant. Well, so I was really moldable as a young leader to listen to those that were like, had already been doing this a long time. So I like respected their opinion. Well, one of the regular statements that would be said all the time from our top two leaders, and definitely our top leader, he would say, the kingdom of God is taken by forceful men. Is some scripture. I got to look it up. I don't even know where the hell that is in the Bible, but it's there somewhere. But they would use this scripture to say that as men of God, we're supposed to like lead with authority and like take things by force. Such a colonizing idea, but also was like this scriptural license to be assholes and to be narcissists and to run people over in the name of Jesus. And we talked about this last week, but it was this whole like that whole Mark Driscoll thing, get on the bus or get run over. And that was the culture that I was raised up as a young male pastor was take the kingdom by force. You have to be a forceful man. If you are weak, if you are feminine, you will get run over. And that was the culture. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, when I would come into church and like do anything that was like slightly flamboyant or like anything that screamed of femininity, like it was, you were ridiculed and you were looked down on as not being a forceful person. And that I saw play out for my whole pastoral career in almost 20 years as a pastor. That's what I saw. And if I wasn't being forceful and like, and working, forcing my way, I was perceived as being passive, and passive was identified with being feminine or weak, because women are weak, right? It's always said women are the weaker gender. And that is something I heard many times in church, that men have to lead the church. Women can't lead because they're weaker gender and they can't handle the stress of being pastors in the church. Ugh, so gross. And so I'm going to look that up. I'd love to hear your thoughts, because that was my experience of that world of like, you have to be a forceful man, you know, but I lived that. I perpetrated that on other women in our church. And I've had to live with that and like work through, I guess, if you want to use evangelical language, had to repent of that. I really had to do a lot of the work of saying, you know what? Like, I actually, a few months ago, had messaged this one girl that was on one of my worship teams because I was working through this stuff. And I had a conversation with her, like, I totally ran you over and that was bullshit. I told her this. And it was because I was like being taught to be forceful. And especially in the evangelical world, like when you're a worship pastor, what's forceful? Well, demand excellence, you know? So like we had to like push anybody out that slightly didn't meet our standards, because that was weak. To like not correct somebody's singing was weak. But it wasn't natural for me to lead like that because I had a different nature. I didn't have this like, you know, I'm the man, respect me vibe about me. But I really had to force that out myself.
People like Beth Moore and Lisa Bevere started coming on the scenes. And Lisa Bevere is very much, I think she harbors what would be considered, as far as gender binary, she has very masculine energy about her. She's like, we need to be the lioness. We need to be aggressive. We need to take ground for Jesus. Also under the umbrella of our husband. And that's very clear. Very, very clear. She talks about how her husband is the one that really talks to her and gives her revelation, how she takes everything to him, how all of that, right?
Yeah, and, I, an example of this, the women always had to be endorsed by the men.
Yes.
So like it always had to be really clear. Church I worked at, huge church, Joyce Meyer preached one weekend. And it was like really clear. And they made it really clear. Our lead pastor made it super clear that the church was inviting her and allowing her to preach. It had that feel of like, and all throughout the message, there was many, many, many references to her husband. You know, it was clear that she was making it clear, even in her message, like, I submit. And I submit to my husband because he's the man. And so that always stuck with me because, I mean, if there's anybody who has lesbian energy in the kingdom, in the church, it's Joyce Meyer.
Yeah. Like, so true.
Joyce is so lesbian vibe, but she's still like kind of submitted to that idea of, well, the men are in charge here, because that's the only way she can get invited. Is if she held that up. Mm-hmm. And so, and then the same thing, like, I think you said Beth Moore was considered like a big leader, but it was only women's conferences. They would only let women, they would only use Beth Moore and her simulcast, right? Like at every church at the same time, but it was only a women's conference. Like women could only preach to the women. And like the men would stay away from it. And I, as a male pastor, we would be annoyed. Men would be annoyed by women's events because they were seen as less than important. And that was what was taught to me, is like, eh, let the girls do their thing. And that's BS, you know, like, because they're women. That's the only reason this isn't, but is like the biggest event in the church all year, you know, but because it's a women's event. Yeah, we're not going to really, good luck, you're on your own. That was the environment. And and so that's been my experience too in church, is moving. I don't know if we've talked about this, but like moving the patriarchal view of women. If you move from masculine to feminine, there's so much loss of like respect from people, because I moved from like this position of power to say, I have a voice here. I'm a man. You will all follow my lead, to now living my life as a woman. And in that view, that evangelical view says, well, now you don't have, first of all, we think you're going to hell because you transitioned. And two, now you're just a woman, and we don't believe you or trust anything you say. And I've experienced that a lot. Like, I've said the same thing to people when I was a male pastor. And now that I live my life as female, I say the same thing, and they don't want to hear it from me. Mm-hmm. And so that's been really interesting to work through. That is like the same exact message to the same exact person is received by a man. Especially when I told him as a man, here's what's going on right here. And then this one, I'm saying the same thing, and it's completely ignored now that I live my life as a woman.
I've experienced that. Obviously, I've experienced it multiple times. But one of the things that jumps out to me, an experience that does, is I was at my kid's elementary school and talking with the principal about something. And I told him something. And then I came back a few hours later, and I had my husband with me, and my husband said the same thing that I said. And the principal looked at him just awestruck and just said, oh my gosh. And the principal's male, looked at my husband and was like, oh my gosh, are you sure you don't want to shift to being a teacher, like being a principal? Because what you just said is so good and it's so insightful. I was just sitting there thinking, okay, but I told you the same thing a couple hours mm-hmm. later, and you didn't even care. Mm-hmm. It was just wah, wah, wah. But as soon as a man says it,
right,
it is immediately elevated and important. And
right,
how do we break free of this? Growing up in this space where I actually feel like we were starting to get better, right? In the 70s, we are reproductive, you know, at least the right to an abortion. And we're starting to make our way towards the ERA. And then Dobson, Falwell, and all the other ones make their big entrance. I mean, they were already there, but like that's when they really started galvanizing the evangelical movement.
Right.
And it became less about a relationship with Jesus and more about how can we control.
Yeah. And grow and get and bigger. Grow.
Yeah. So with that, I feel like a lot of archaic ideologies came back. How do, knowing what we're up against, the nominees were just officially announced. No matter what, the greatest generation will be ruling our country. I mean, I'm just...
Right.
Good grief. The greatest generation. Not even the boomer
generation.
It's like
Groundhog's Day around here is what it is.
Yeah. So no matter what, that's happening. How do we, for those out there that are like, that really struggle with having this like non-binary perspective.
Yeah.
In life, like, how do we move forward? How do we challenge that narrative in our own thinking? How do we gently challenge it with others' thinking? Right.
Yeah. Well, I have a few thoughts. The first one is we need to move, you know, we've been saying the word binary. If somebody's listening to this, they're like, what the hell does that mean? Binary is like, it's either this or that. You're either good or you're evil, or you're either gay or you're straight, right? Or you're either a boy or you're a girl. Those are the binaries. I think we need to move from binary thought to spectral thinking, to understanding that everything around us, no matter what, gender, race, ability, what else, other things are there, good and evil, you know, pure and sinful, if you would like, we need to move away from the binary and look at everything on earth as spectral and look at it as a nuanced and understand that we cannot paint with broad strokes. And it's really tempting to look at scripture, if you're a Christian, and say, well, it's either good or evil. It's either the devil or God. That's not reality. If you actually read that book, there's a lot of gray area and there's a lot of in between and there's a lot of question marks that happen in the world. And so I think that's our first thing, is we need to come to a place of understanding that it's a good thing to learn. It's a good thing to change. And that's where I come up into so many arguments. I shouldn't say arguments, but so many disagreements with people in my old evangelical circles who have such binary thought. And changing that means that they feel they're compromising on God's message. And God did not create that. You know, man made it easy for themselves to think in binary. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first thing. The other thing we need to learn. I had a situation where I had a hater who I used to be with one of their pastors, and this person got vicious with me. And I told them, because I had a relationship. Norm, I'm very, very slow to block people unless it's on TikTok, and there's so many people that are just block those people. But this woman, it took me a long time to block her and to cut her out. And I said to her, I said, one of the last things I said to her, I said, hey, I want to meet with you and I want to have a loving disagreement called discourse. We have to figure out how to have loving conversations where two people disagree and they can still love each other and find common ground and walk away from the conversation and still disagree. We've somehow created that Christianity has to have it their way. And that is just not helpful. It's not helpful at all. And that's why we're seeing it now in politics. And now politics has like invaded our Christianity. Our Christianity has invaded our politics. So this dualistic thinking is so far apart, but we need to learn how to talk to one another without hating each other. Like if I could sit across from you and say, I want you to see my humanity as a trans person. And I want that person to walk away from the conversation and be like, I don't think it's right for you to transition, but I can still have the open conversation and love you as a person. Mm-hmm. You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to agree with my theology or my ideology or my gender. You don't have to agree with it, but you can respect me and we can have a conversation about it. That's something we've lost. It's something we need to come back to. And then, you know, I think this is going to be a little more specific, but one of the most, I would say one of the things that takes us back the furthest, you talked about like the women who the feminist movements of our country that really moved the ball forward for women. Now we have women who have taken claim of that and think that no one else can gain rights now. So I run into what are called TERFs, which is called trans exclusionary radical feminist. That's the, if you ever wondered what TERF means, like there is vicious, vicious opposition to trans women being involved in women's conversations from people that fought these exact same battles. And we look like trans people are not trying to like invade anything. We're just trying to live. And we actually want to fight those battles with you. And if women can stop fighting each other in all, not just trans women, but like women in general, if we can stop fighting each other and fight together, I think we could see some huge change happen, because that's how things changed before. But we just, now we think, oh, trans woman, that's a man. We can't make room for you. No, if you could move, and that's what I'm saying, move from your binary thought to your spectral thinking. That might be able to help us move the ball a little bit.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you to those that have reached out with your support. Whether you have left a review, if you haven't left a review, this would be a really, really good time to leave a review. Read every single one of them. So thank you. And for those that are subscribers to my Patreon, thank you. It means so much. One of the new features that I am adding for my paid Patreon subscribers is the chat feature. And this is just a way that we can all continue this conversation that we're having in the podcast. And if you are not a paid subscriber, unfortunately, the chat feature won't be available to you, but you can be a free subscriber and you'll just get the weekly newsletters. Y'all are amazing. And I honestly could not do this podcast without the support that I receive from each one of you. So thank you so much. It's interesting that you say that. I have had that conversation with many people about how women are consistently put in a space where they have to compete with each other. And the patriarchy does that, because think about church. And I don't know if we've had this discussion before. I know I've talked about it before with other people, but for the sake of this podcast, we're going to pretend it's our first time talking about it. Women are in the church. Let's say that there's 10 ministry positions that are available.
Yeah.
3 or 4 of those are spaces where women can be.
Right.
All of them are spaces where men can be.
Yep.
So women know that they can occupy those spaces. They also know that they have to show the same aggression that they see their male counterparts putting forward, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of myself. I had to mimic masculine aggression, but do it with heels and lipstick on and infantilize myself to make myself, quote, innocent, to make myself childlike, so that they felt like they were helping me as that poor, weaker vessel.
So interesting.
Yeah. while I had to compete with all of these other women, I had to sit back and say, all right, well, here's her strengths and weaknesses. How can, you know what I mean? Like, it's, mm-hmm. there's so much competition just for a woman to be able to exist in her body and be able to use, you can call it spiritual gifting, but to be able to use her knowledge, intelligence, power, and authority. And yeah, she's going to look at that other woman who is obviously competition and say, absolutely not. You're not allowed to be here, because the more power that a woman gets, because mm-hmm. a woman doesn't get, I, in this country, the white man, the white cishet man, right? He is power. And the closer that a woman can get to that, the closer her proximity to power is.
Mm.
And she's going to battle all the other women.
Right.
Because she wants a seat at the table, even though we all know she's going to have a seat in the corner taking notes while all the other men.
Thank you for being the admin.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But she's got to claw her way to that space.
Right.
Where she's the closest proximity to power. And she's going to work her ass off to make sure that those men continue to be in power, because that is her closest space of power.
It's really interesting, you know, understanding that you and cis women have had this battle like for generations in the church, and understanding that, you know, sometimes in trans women, it's a completely different experience, because like we're coming from that place of privilege and we're now entering into these rules that we have no idea exist in the first place. We've heard about them, but like I didn't know any of these standards and things that were going on.
Okay. I need you to list it. I need you to just like, I would love that. Please just do that. I'm so curious what your observation of female is
in church leadership.
Like just in church, leadership. But just in general. This is selfish for me, but it would just be really enlightening to me.
Yeah. Well, like, so as you know, before I transitioned, I was a white male. So like, put aside the fact that I was called like so privileged for being able to choose my gender. I was told that many times, because you're a white man, you're privileged and get to choose your gender. Fuck off. You know, no.
And the
I'm
horse
sorry.
You rode in on.
Right. Exactly. That's something my mom says all the time, by the way. My mom says, fuck off and the horse you rode in on. I don't know if you're going to leave that in the show, but it's fun to say.
Well, my favorite thing right now is fuck you and the horse you rode in on. So you're fine.
My mom says it all the time.
It's giddy great. Up.
Yes. So I came from this place of like, I could like, the best way I could put it was like when I was applying for jobs, when I was a white man living my life, I applied for a job. I got an interview and got the job 100% of every job I ever applied for. Now, when I transitioned, I applied for hundreds of jobs, got zero interviews, and had to work a connection to get a job that barely paid me any money. And it was the same company I worked for when I was a man, and I make way less money now. Put that all together. I didn't know these rules. I thought, well, of course, I've always been a great interviewer. But when the Zoom camera comes on and there's a trans woman sitting in front of you, nobody can say it legally, but there's assumptions made. Okay, well, you know, so like, I didn't know any of these rules. I didn't know I was going to go for months without a job because I couldn't find one, you know, because when you're a white man, you just know, whatever, I'll apply for a job and I'll get it. Like, that's how it was. I didn't know this. I didn't know that I had to fight and like stand out, you know, in like this pool of other women, you know, and me coming in looking like a dude in women's clothes in the very beginning of my transition was even more hard. So that's what I was saying in the beginning. It gets weird for trans women because we feel like we have to like get very, very dainty And we have to get very extremely passive in order to move up, if that makes sense. So it's like,
oh, that's so fascinating.
For us as trans women, where you say you're going to be in heels and you got to like be aggressive, a trans woman being aggressive is really awkward and it really doesn't come off very well. Like, and if you don't pass, like if it, like there's a lot of trans women, they're beautiful, but they don't pass, you know? And so they have a really hard time. So the way that trans women have to try to get ahead in the world is by passing and becoming smaller and daintier and not aggressive. We have to be like the little flower in the room. So like I've noticed in my life and, you know, in the last 2 years, the more like the less aggressive I am, the more questions I'm asked. But if I'm and the more opportunities I'm given when I don't aggress and try to reach goals, like it's not, here's something, I don't know if this might be a rule that I wasn't aware of, but like for white men, going after goals and like achieving is like so great. Everybody wants you to do that. But if women are seen as like aggressively going after goals and like being like promoting things and all that, it's not very well received.
It's selfish.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. So like I learned even in my music stuff and in like my speaking that if I was like aggressively trying to book things, I got no bookings. But when I just sit back and I like just be quiet, I get more, which is so weird. And I didn't know this rule coming into womanhood. I didn't know because my only framework was from the male, like go take the hill. And so that didn't translate when I transitioned at all. So there was a lot of unwritten rules. And sometimes for trans women, it's like the opposite of what cis women are doing. It's like, we have to get smaller. We have to like get quieter. And it's hard because that shows up in our bank accounts because we don't make enough money. We don't, you know, it really becomes a mess and it's a systemic failure we have.
I agree. I'm just digesting that.
That was a lot.
No, it's not a lot. I can recall times where I have had to make myself smaller. That mm-hmm. mostly happened in church, though. There was a pretty big, I actually felt like there was a chasm of difference when I was no longer going to church. I remember looking at my husband and saying, I can hold court everywhere in this city. Right? Like I can stand up in front of a group of people and people could respect some things that I'm saying. Obviously, not to the extent as if my husband stood up and said it, but
right.
For the most part, it's acceptable. But I knew, and I told them, I said, I know that the minute that I walk through those doors at a church, my value as a human person drops so significantly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And people yeah. see me as something pretty they can look at.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that I can advance in church is if I use that as a way, right? Because people right. want to look at the, you know, I, depending on where I was at in ministry. So there would be, if I was up on stage, I had to dress conservative, but if they wanted me to greet people, then I was allowed to wear things that were a lot more seductive. They would call it seductive, but
yeah.
my shirts could have a lower cut neckline or my, yeah. you know, like my dresses could be spaghetti strapped and showing arms and everything because they knew that I could bring people in by the way that I looked.
Right. Speaking of clothing, right? Okay. This is a fascinating story too. So I'm working in a church. When I transitioned, I was working for a church. I started working for like an affirming church, just doing audio at this church. And I didn't have any clothes. I had like barely out. I had like two outfits, you know. And those outfits were like crop top t-shirts and leggings. That's about all I had. Okay.
Oh no.
That's all I had. Now, I did my best with them. I didn't look terrible, but like,
girl, you're amazing. Please. I'm sure you looked great. You're
I rocked those leggings and those crops. Here's the thing. I didn't know, because coming from, here's a really fascinating thing. In mega church, that is totally appropriate attire for women. Like,
yes,
like a cropped, like a, just not like super crop, but like enough of a crop, you know, and leggings. Girls wore that to church all the time. Girls would wear that on our stage at church. You know, that was totally appropriate. But I got to, I transitioned and start attending this other church, a little more traditional. I got talked to about what I was wearing. That has never in my life happened to me, ever. So at the age of 34, I'm getting talked to about what I'm wearing to church and how it's inappropriate. And that was a wild rule. I knew that it was unfair, but I had never experienced it until that moment. And that was really hard for me to deal with. It was like, I wish I could tell you it'll be better next week, but I don't have any clothes and I don't have any money. So I don't know what to do, you know? And so that turned, that was a whole conversation.
I know you've had, in your experience in ministry, like just the positions that you held, you have had to either have those conversations with women or you have passed them off to other people because, well, in your words, like you couldn't have. I mean, I think the way that you put it before was like you couldn't have those conversations because you wanted to be wearing the outfits that the girls were wearing.
I was like, man, that was so cute. You know, like
I think it's so, and that's why I wanted to have you on here, because I think it's so, you have a very unique perspective, especially in this niche of trying to uphold this like Dobsonian ideology and theology that women are there to please men. We are there to be objects. We are there to be trophies. We are allowed to have intelligence if it does not overstate or if it does not overshadow our husband's intelligence or the pastor's intelligence or whatever man is in the room.
Right.
We can't be even. We have to be just underneath because it will take away his masculinity, which is just saying that it'll make him feel like he doesn't have enough power. I made this statement. It was about a year ago that I said this. I made this statement that I said, I was born and raised and conditioned to be God's trophy wife. And that's the way that I feel all women in the church were. I was taught how to smile. Women cock their head to the side and they smile like a fundy woman smiles in a very specific way. I wasn't ever taught the baby voice. However, I do know that gets me further if I'm in church. So I can certainly shift the way that I'm talking to be able, depending on the group that I'm with at church, right? So if, like, if I'm just hanging out with girls, I can have this conversation, like I can, or not this conversation, I can have this tonation in my voice.
Yeah.
But if I'm hanging out with guys, they would much rather prefer this.
Yeah.
And it's just a very simple shift.
Right.
But one, I speak with authority, and the other, I make you feel good.
Yeah.
And it's now, very.
Now enter in trans women where our voices, we have to go through therapy to make our voices higher because you'd have to have a surgery to have your voice change like naturally. Right. So if we are too low in our voice or too, you know, I don't even know if I can get down there. You've heard videos of me speaking before I transition. My voice is super low, but like it's like, I hear you so much on the voice intonation because it's like, it does change how we're reacted to. Mm-hmm. Another like weird unwritten, you started touching on like intelligence and all this. Like so I came from being a straight white pastor, right? Mm-hmm. Coming out as trans. And then I started dating and then realized I was bi, which was a whole Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, like a whole thing. But okay, so like coming into that and feeling like my body, I had to have this like huge man in order to feel like the relationship was right. Or like I had to always be smaller than the men, or I had to, I had this thought at one point. I'm like, that is so evangelical. Like, shut up, Joanna. You know, I was like, should I go back to school? Like, don't I want my husband someday to like earn more money than me? Isn't that what I'm supposed to do? Like, that was what in church, that men are supposed to make more money. I had a pastor one time in our college ministry say, men, if your wife makes more money than you, she will resent you. And it isn't the proper order. So now, coming from a place of white privilege, white male privilege, to say, well, now do I have to start earning less money? Am I like, should I educate myself? These are things I've had to think through and like tell myself, like, that's such BS. Like, stop thinking these ways. And like, especially with dating, it's like, you know, I've in my mind, like when I first started dating, I had to also undo the expectations that I had on women while dating. I had to undo that on myself. I was putting those burdens on myself to say, like, you have to be like wife material. That was something that was like preached from the stage to so many women in our church. Like, you have to be like the housewife. And I don't want to be like a housewife, you know, like,
yeah.
And I've had to undo a lot of these stuff in like dating, because I found myself like really early on in relationships getting so serious, like it was for in the evangelical dating world. So like to come in here and have to understand I'm holding myself to like this evangelical standard of a woman, and I'm not evangelical anymore, you know? And like, now I'm entering into this like thing that I have to completely undo. That's been a weird thing to work through. Just to sit, like release myself of my inner like image of what a woman should look like. That was so baked in me through my church experiences. It's really hard to undo that stuff.
It's interesting. I think that I referenced a book of James Dobson last episode, where he talked about how if a woman says that she wants an education or she wants a career, she's lying to you. Wow. And you have to tell her, basically, but I know that you actually want to stay at home and be a homemaker and raise my kids. That's what you really want. But society and this feministic movement has perverted and distorted God's view of women and femininity. Yeah. For me, that was very much baked in me. I think I mentioned even before how with my upbringing, women like Beth Moore and Lisa Bevere, those were pretty women to my mom. Those women were beautiful. But my mom made sure, this was several years ago, that she looked at me and she was just like, Nancy Pelosi is so ugly.
Right.
But that's because she had a position of power. And that right. was not okay.
It's look at how many people in Christianity hate Kamala Harris mm-hmm. simply because, well, she's a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
But because she's in the second one, like probably the second most powerful position on earth,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, and they can handle that mm-hmm. and they won't even take the time to pronounce her name right, because mm-hmm. because it's like putting her down, mm-hmm. you know, and I even had family members like, oh, that woman. I'm like, really? Like, you can't even say her name because she's in a position of power over you. Mm-hmm. Can't handle that. Like, yeah, it's hard to undo that stuff when you were so indoctrinated into it. And these authors are selling out, you know, big conferences as the main speaker, and they seem like the authority, you know. And when the pastors seem like the authority, you think they're speaking for God. And And pastors and church leaders have put their foot and their mouth into places that they don't belong. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry, but pastors, you are not gender theorists. This is not your avenue. Gender studies is not your avenue. Like, you know, sociology is not your world. You're a spiritual caregiver. Do that. Stop regulating people's bodies and their lives and their positions. Like, that's not your role. Like, I'm in a class right now called Pastoral Care and Context is the name of this class. If listeners, I'm in seminary, I went back to school. Sure. You know, you get hurt by the church. Why not just learn all about it? So I'm in this class and we're talking right now about, like, pastors need to understand what they are and what they aren't. And we've been, like, going through for weeks about, like, here's the lane of a spiritual caregiver. And a lot of stuff that pastors try to impose and the things they try to impose on others are not the lane of a pastor. And telling women, like, how they should look, how much they should weigh, had a pastor do that once too, saying that if a husband cheats on the wife, it's the wife's fault because she let herself go. I had a pastor say that verbatim from stage. Another pastor got in trouble for that. I saw a video like last year where some pastor said that and it went viral. I'm like, shit, my pastor said that so many times from stage.
That was women's conferences.
I wish TikTok was around back then because this guy would have been filleted. But
that's how it was. That's how it was growing up. I was told that too, that when you get married, remember, you can't let yourself go because your husband still has to date you. He still has to have something to look forward to.
Right. His eyes going to wander.
Yeah. Just this idea. I wrote this. I just recently got on Substack, recent by like yesterday. I wrote something where I said that virginity is currency in the evangelical movement for women. And it's something that I'm going to misquote myself for sure.
Wait, I mean, also, it's like virginity's currency, but also sluttiness is also like the sense. It's like $2.99 virginity, $2.99 slutty. You know, it's like it's like it's expected.
So this is what I wrote. In the world I grew up in, virginity is currency. Virginity purchases security. Virginity is the prison girls are kept in. We are taught to guard it for our future. When our husbands take it, we have been taught through observation to remain childlike so he feels as though every time he is with his wife, he has conquered something.
Wow.
That is what it's like to grow up as a girl. And I feel for trans women because they're having to emulate that without even knowing that's what they're having to emulate.
Right. And I went out with a guy who, this is hilarious. I went out with a guy that, like, was still evangelical. I didn't know this prior to the date, but he's like still attending an evangelical church. And I started picking up during this date, like, oh my God, he's going to want me to be that role. He's going to want me to fulfill this evangelical, like, mold of a woman, and that's 0% what I am. And I my heart breaks. So, like, you say your heart breaks for, like, trans women in this, but, like, my heart breaks that, like, you had to live with this your whole life, you know, like, that is the one thing that, like, I can't say that I've experienced. And that's where people misunderstand trans women. We're like, we're women and, like, we demand our rights. That doesn't mean that we are saying that we have your experience as a cis woman. Like, if any trans woman says to you as a cis woman, I understand. Bullshit. I don't understand. I don't know what it was like to be a teenager in the youth group. I don't. And that's where it's important. Like, that's the posture we should take with one another. If trans women can say, I don't understand, because this is how this has been my reality. And if cis women can say, I don't understand your reality, but we're both women and we should support each other, that's a beautiful place we need to go. And it's a beautiful place we need to be. Because gosh, I just, you know, I know for a fact, as a young pastor, that I perpetuated that bullshit on women in our ministry. And I have conversations all the time with girls now, women, girls, they were girls then, but women now, that were like, yeah, you were a pastor and you said this. I'm like, yeah, I probably did say that. And that's awful. You know, I had a, all the time. I mean, I'm having conversations all the time with people. I had a conversation with a bisexual person the other day who was outed in our ministry, and me as a pastor, young, not trained, under a very homophobic culture, perpetuated some things. And it's a constant state of understanding, you know what, like, I fucked that up. And I can come to a place and say, like, I can own what I messed up and I'm just going to do better. And that's what I think we failed at in the evangelical world. I say we, I'm not even part of it anymore, but like, the evangelical movement has really bombed at learning and understanding, you know what, this isn't working. And this thing that we're like pushing down the road, like, this isn't central to our faith. We should learn and grow and change. You know, this repression of women and making women fill these roles. You can quote Titus as much as you want, but that doesn't mean that you need to like keep women in their place. And that doesn't mean you need to create this purity culture. So it's just a constant state of like, we need to learn. We need to be willing to learn and say, I got that wrong, but I'm going to do better now. And I'm going to learn now. And that's why I would probably like call myself, and this pisses off all my evangelical friends, but you know, if anybody like listens to my content, you know, like, I'm still a Christian. I say that publicly. I'm a trans woman and I'm a Christian. But like, I'm what you call a process theologian, which means what I believe now isn't going to be the same in 10 years. And that's a good thing. We need to be willing to learn and to say, yeah, that thing, I got that wrong. And I learned over the last few years about, you know, what's more like this central figure of our faith. And so that's something we've lost in the church today.
Yeah. I was listening to something that you said and I wrote something down, and it reminded me of how frustrating it is to come out of this evangelical movement and fundamentalism and meet other people who have come out of fundamentalism, but they're just as militant about stuff outside as they were inside. There was like a whole bunch of rules that they were gender specific. Some of them were across the board. There's more leniency to the cishet white male, but it's just like in general, right?
Right.
And now we're out. And here's the problem is, I don't know what I'm supposed to boycott and when I'm supposed to boycott it, because holy shit, if I hold up a Starbucks mug, I've got people so pissed at me. If I'm doing this, people are angry. If I'm doing this, people aren't angry, or I'm not doing this enough, or I'm doing it too much. Like,
right.
Y'all are creating another cult.
Exactly.
This is exhausting, and not everybody is going to agree with you. And not everybody has the time to just sit ad nauseum and research all of this stuff. Like, just because it's your cause doesn't mean it needs to be mine. You can be passionate about something and I can be not passionate about. That's the beauty. That's what makes us interesting. I got
this is getting back to spectral thinking.
Yes.
Understanding that there's nuance in everything. So like, I, I sometimes catch flack from my friends in the queer community because I say things, and a mantra of mine is that when the evangelical church wants to change, when churches want to change, I want to be in the boardroom because I built a bridge to them. I don't want to be on the streets yelling, because the ones on the streets yelling are not being listened to by the people in the boardroom. And so, like, for me, you know, I'll catch that flack, like, why do you even go to these churches? You want to hear a crazy story? This is freaking wild. And I've only told, well, now I'm going to tell the whole, I put it on my TikTok this week, but if we still have TikTok by the time you listen to this, we'll see. But,
yeah.
I did something really freaking wild this last week. I attended a service at the church that fired me this last Sunday. I went to that church. Yeah, I see you looking at me, Stephanie. Like, I attend churches where I know my haters are. And the reason I do it is because it's actually very spiritual practice for me to, like, go into these places and, like, have communion with people who hate me. It's a very spiritual practice for me. I go into mega churches all the time where I know people know who I am and they hate my presence, but I'm building bridges. And those who don't want to listen to me, they don't have to, but I'm going to live my life in a way where I'm not throwing daggers at them and telling them that I hate them because of what they believe. I'm going to say, listen, I don't buy what you believe, but I believe what I believe, but you can still talk to me. And that's where so many people will get on TikTok. They'll get online and they'll see an evangelical be like, screw the church, get rid of it all. Well, that's not reality. You know, like, that's not going to happen. You say, like, I'm an atheist and everyone should be an atheist. Like, no, this is exactly why, like, or I'm pansexual and I think everyone in the whole world is pansexual. Well, like, that's not going to help the cis straight man. You know, that's just going to make, that's going to push the stereotypes forward. So let's build the bridges. Let's not burn them. You know, I think that's important. And yeah, so I do this all the time. I go to churches that I know are homophobic and transphobic, and I force them to talk to a trans person and see me as a human being. And it's pretty fun.
I didn't know
practice that. You didn't know that I went to my old church?
No. I do. I didn't know that you went to your old church, but I knew that you go to churches.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Yep.
I
have interesting conversations with pastors in general. It's very interesting.
Yeah. A month ago, Greg Locke called out somebody by the name of Jen Rockwell. And I did a video where I was like saying, like, how dare you? That's not okay. Yeah. And that you can't choose what goes viral.
Yeah, I know.
It got a lot of attention. Everyone's like, where's her group online? And so people started coming on there and saying what group it is on Facebook. And it became a thing. And so because I wasn't the only one that did this. So tons of people from TikTok and social media were flooding into that group. And the thing is they are still very much far right-wing conservative evangelical Christians.
Yeah.
Her and I private message each other on Facebook. And we've talked over the phone a few times. I asked her, I said, I think that there are people that follow my account that are queer and trans, and I want to make sure that this is a safe place for them, because if it's not, I will just politely message who I think might have gone on there and tell them, I don't think, in my personal opinion, I don't perceive this to be a safe space for you. Enter at your own risk. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, it will be. Obviously, queer and trans people know that anytime they go into a space that says it's evangelical, it is not safe for them. So right. I don't need to police that for them. And I understand that's not my role, but I feel like I take being a leader in any capacity seriously.
Yeah.
So anywho, it turned into a thing and people were really angry because they're like, they like Trump and you should call her out. And I'm like, are you kidding? Grow up.
That's not
grow up, because you know what? Her and I, we have had conversations and we do not agree. on who should be the president of the United States. However, I can tell you that we agree on a lot of the same things. We just think it can get done in a different way.
Exactly.
And we need to
Yeah. Like, for example, how that plays out when I'm in an evangelical megachurch is, you know, as much as I am so absurdly like over the bathroom debate, right? Should trans women be going into women's bathrooms and like all the conservative trolls? If I find you in there, well, like, sir, why would you be in there in the first place? But like this whole debate over trans women in bathrooms, I know, and I think that queer people and also like conservative Christians need to read the room, know where you are, understand who you're speaking to. Mm-hmm. If I'm at a pride event, I'm going to go freely into a woman's bathroom. If I'm in a Panera Bread and there's only a men's or women's option, I'm going into the women's room. I'm going to do what I have to do. But when I'm in mega churches, I'm really, now this is, that's why I always say when I talk about this stuff online, like, this is not for everybody. Like, I go into these places, I make sure that I stop at a Starbucks before and I go to the bathroom before. And I had one time where I was like, oh my gosh, I have to pee because the service is going really long. I found a family bathroom because I knew what environment I was in. I didn't want to trigger somebody in there. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it's right or wrong that I have to think about that, it's bullshit that I have to think about that. But I know what environment I'm in and I'm going to be respectful where I'm at. And I'm going to like build the bridge. I'm not going to walk into the room and upset. I'm not going to walk into the women's room in the peak hour of their 11 o'clock service when like there's 100 women in the bathroom. I'm not going to go in there. I'm going to maybe go in the middle of service when no one is in the room. Like, we have to think about these, be more strategic in a way that builds bridges to one another. Because if I walk in the bathroom to make a point, Karen's not going to want to talk to me in the lobby. But if I go use a family restroom or go use restroom middle service and I talk to Karen in the lobby, she's like, I met a trans woman today and she was really lovely. And that's a win. And we have to understand this is a long game. This is not going to change overnight. This is like a 50, 60 year battle we're in. And it's not going to change. I always tell people, this is a long game. If you're looking for quick wins, you're in the wrong fight.
I'm telling people that like, reformations historically happen around every 500 years.
Yeah.
And they take a very long time to happen. And we are overdue for a reformation. I think if we look back in 200 years, we're going to say that was the Great Reformation.
Right. And you don't really know it's happening sometimes when it's happening.
I'm sure when people were being burned at the stake for being a heretic because they were a Protestant and not part of the Church of England, or they were choosing to be a Catholic and not being part of the Church of England, I'm sure that they were like, what is going on? But we can look back and historically, this is one of the greatest periods that people still research and still study. And
I'm studying it right now. That's 2024.
Exactly. Yep. And I think that's what's going on. I think that what I hear you say is it's about honor. And that's something that I know we've talked to our kids about, but we really have this like culture of honor in our home. Like, I know that really goes back to like evangelical speak, a culture of this. We're going to cultivate a culture. It is true. So if I go into somebody's home and they have traditions in their home, even if I do not practice those traditions, I honor those traditions because I am in their space.
If I want somebody to use my proper name and pronouns, I will respectfully use a family bathroom if that makes them comfortable. If I'm asking that of them, I will, because I'm in their space. Exactly like what you're saying. I'm in their space. I'm going to honor their family tradition in that time. Even though tradition might be bullshit.
Right.
I don't have to like it.
When I was in the evangelical movement, I remember hearing a famous worship leader say that when we go into a church and we know that church doesn't speak in tongues, we're not going to do that because that's rude. And that's disrespectful of the culture of that church. And that always stuck with me. And it is, you can translate that external of the church. And when I go into people's spaces, I respect who they are as a person. And I have the expectation that my kids do the same thing. And you look at if you filter everything through a culture of honor, through like a filter of honor, is what I'm saying, does that honor that person? Mm. Or does that take from that person? Right. And I don't want to be somebody that takes humanity from another person, that dehumanizes, that takes and removes honor from another human.
Right. Right.
And that is how I live my life and how I raise my kids to live their life. Is you're doing what you're saying. Does that bring honor to that person? Does that honor who that person is? And that there can be a lot of differences, right? If somebody has so egregiously dehumanized you, or dehumanizing other people, the best way maybe to honor somebody is to give boundaries and walk away politely.
Exactly. I had a horrible experience at a mega church, and I just decided I won't go back, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's right down the street from my house. I live so close to it. And it was the most homophobic, transphobic rant the pastor went on. And he knew I was in the room. He knew, he saw me beforehand. And he went out of his way to do it. And you know what? I came to your party. It was a shitty party. I'm not coming back. You know, like I'm good. Thanks for the invite. So yeah. I'm never going to come back to your party again.
Real quick, because I have loved this conversation, but I want to close it out the way that I do with every single one of them. And I know that you did this in the first season, but I want to do this now. Uh-oh. What is your favorite book or the current one that you're reading?
I am reading a book called Being Mortal. I forget the name of the author. It's for school, but it's about death and dying. And it's a physician, a doctor wrote this book, and it's just about like how we can help people usher into death. Because I'm studying to be a hospital chaplain. That's what I'm going into professionally. So like I've been around a lot of death, and this is just really interesting read for me. I'm loving that book.
What's your favorite song?
Ew.
I know, it's like choosing a favorite.
I have to say, there's been a major shift in my music since the last time I was on your show.
That's because I told you. I was like, stop this.
You've been harping on me.
I have officially
stopped listening to worship music.
Praise whatever there is.
PTL.
Hashtag PTL.
Yes. You're going to laugh at me.
Probably not.
This song, it's from the Walter Mitty soundtrack. Okay. It's called Stay Alive by Jose Gonzalez. It is my favorite. I think it's one of my favorite songs ever. It was a song that came on while my first daughter was being born. We had like music on in the room, and this song came on, and it just reminds me of my kids and brings me to a very transcendent spiritual place. So I really like it.
I love that. And then movie. What's your favorite movie?
Oh my gosh. I have always and forever love. Can I list a few movies? Is that okay?
Knock yourself out. Yeah.
Garden State. Love Garden State.
Oh, that's a good one.
Imitation Game.
Okay. You and Sean would be like in lockstep. He loves that movie.
The Darkest Hour. I like World War II movies.
Oh, me too.
I have a new movie that I love that I just saw last night. Poor Things with Emma Watson.
Poor things.
Oh my gosh. It's very, very sexual. And here was something fun that I learned. It's so great to be out of evangelical world, because this movie was like the most sexual movie I've ever seen in my life. It was like pretty much porn, but I felt zero guilt watching it. I thoroughly enjoyed the movie because I was able to just enjoy the story, even though there was like tons of sex going on. It was a really good movie.
Awesome. And Darkest Hour is a good movie.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, that's a good movie. Sean keeps asking me. He's like, you need to see Imitation Game. And in fact, he's going to listen to this. He's going to be like, see, I told you, you need to watch it. So
such a good movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
and it has a lot of queer undertones from that era. It's just really interesting.
Ooh, interesting.
You'll like it. Yeah.
All right. I love you so much.
I love you too.
And I'm really thrilled and thankful that we're friends. I knew that we were going to obviously podcast well together, but I'm thankful that I get to talk to you outside of this space. And
we talk like every day, people. Her and I talk on the phone like every day. So
yeah. And it's just weird to have microphones and our headphones attached to us right now.
People are listening to our conversation right now.
Right. Because we do talk all the time. Right. And you really are this candid.
We don't want that on podcast though.
I think you're really this candid. There's no pomp and circumstance here. Thank you. Please, everybody go follow Joanna. Go check out her music. Oh. She's lovely. I adore you. I am so proud of who you are. And I love watching Joanna really become Joanna. Whoever she is today and tomorrow, I'm just privileged to watch this.
Oh, yeah. Don't make me cry.
But my goal is always to make you cry. You know
you
that.
You do it a lot. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Love you. Thank you so much for listening. Please make sure that you are kind to yourself and to others. If you are interested in supporting this show, please click the link at the bottom to my Patreon. These shows take a lot of time and resources, and any support is appreciated. If you are interested in being a guest, please email the show at focusonyourownfamilypodcast@gmail.com. Inside of the show notes, you will find the links to mine and the guests' socials. Please give us a follow. We look forward to talking with you and connecting with you.